Thank you, George. And now it's time for our panel of terminological experts. Gather and give you information about the questions. There are some of you that submitted questions to our forum. And once the experts come up here, then I'd like you to step up and ask your question. So, this is going to be it. You
looking at us?
You too. Where's your knowledge? He's gone? Okay, so I forwarded the questions that came to you guys, and if Gunnar Sindel could please come up and ask the question.
Nobody answered it.
So you don't want to? Okay. Come on then. You can stand wherever you like. You need papers? I think you can take them.
Geomedia, where they have what's called Parsifal, everything from Unified Manager. And that program allows for you to draw a subdivision map using COGO, but in an editor. But once you put it into the base map, when you run the shader in, it does not change any of the COGO attributes that have been included. So I wonder if you actually have the same capabilities.
So I talked about that this morning.
Right.
For hero length. those seven COGO fields that eight microphones. So there's those COGO fields that get created and you can create and then get populated and use COGO in your line work. And those are important fields that don't get modified if you change the GIS geometry of that line work.
That happens in ArcGIS.
Correct.
In ArcGIS, extension?
It's part of the core product. Yeah.
What happened if one of those things that happen in life, the operator clicked the inverse tool button?
And change those attributes?
Yeah. Will they be changed to begin with?
He asked, there's a tool where if you don't have the COGO attributes but you've got a GIS line, you can use this tool called an inverse tool, and it will look at the GIS line and create those COGO attributes. And Amelia was asking, what if you've got an editor who accidentally hits the wrong button, and will it change those COGO attributes? I believe the answer is yes. So hopefully he realizes it and hits the undo button real quick. Ted's got a comment.
Yeah, you can just do it, undo, but inverse is no longer in the product anymore. Now it's called update COGO attributes.
Well, it's not called inverse, but it's the same function.
Let's say it.
I'm hearing you say the data fields don't change vis-a-vis the bearing existence, for example.
Correct.
But the object did change.
Correct.
There's not two objects.
There's a single object. It's got these special fields that it realizes are special because they have important information in them that needs to stay the same.
So the original COGO object has been moved and isn't where it was previously.
It's one line that does, you can change it, but those fields, the information in those fields doesn't get updated.
That's an important thing.
All right, so you can still print, you can move those lines, the you know, close things or, you know, take care of gaps and overlaps. But when you print your map out, you're getting your correct COGO information on the line. You know, really the important thing. You're seeing the correct information.
Unless you do.
What information is stored in an ARC?
What's that? Is it stored in an ARC?
What information is stored for an ARC?
Oh, well, information is stored for an ARC. In the COGO attribute field?
Right.
I'd have to look back at my slide, frankly. I don't know that I can. Distance, bearing,
delta,
arc length, side.
Arc length.
Pretty much you have
all the
curve information is recorded there.
Yeah, the true curves are stored in the geodatabase, and all that information, the definition of those curves are the straight lines, the distance, the bearing, all that stuff is in there.
Radius.
Kick that horse in.
What happens if you split? You already have a line.
Mm-hmm.
It's COGO. It's good. It's 100 feet long. Now you're going to cut it. 20 and 80.
There are tools specific to working with your COGO data. And if you use those tools to do your splits and whatnot, it will update those COGO attributes. But if you just use the standard GIS editing tools, those don't mess with those COGO attributes.
I think we'd love to just see a demonstration that just really takes us right through and just, you know, not just move a line, but, you know, really show us, you know.
Putting in a line.
Yeah, that we could.
Look it up here.
Well, I don't mean not right now, but I mean, you know, when you're giving us a presentation and saying we can move this line, it's still 150 feet or whatever, that's not proving it to us that that's going to help us do our job, because we do much more complicated things than that.
Sure. That was just supposed to be a quick example to just demonstrate. Yeah,
but there's years of doubt out here. So that's just kind of coming from.
Well, if you still have doubt, you can always make an arrangement and come and visit us at Santa Cruz, and you will leave without doubts.
Good.
And they've been doing it for years.
Thank you.
So next year when we come, would you like to see a more technical demo and actually step through some of that stuff? Kind of starting from nothing and putting in a line.
And an arc. We want to, you know.
Sure. Put in a curve.
Yes.
That gives me a year to learn how to
do it. Well, you want to sell to it. If you want to sell it, you've
got to
step up to the plate.
Yeah. Okay, we can do that. Like Bill said, can certainly come up here and see their real world examples. And I can show something next time. Me or my whoever's an animosity. Yeah, that's certainly something we can do. Our test might do.
You know, I have a track map up in my room. I can bring it down for the reception, and you can actually, I have data, and you can just go ahead and do it if you want.
Well, I can't do it. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. That's you guys. You're the experts.
Well,
so if you want to do it.
Bring it down and let people have a go and see what they do.
He said, that's my real data.
Actually, it's been running on personal SP too, so.
So there's, maybe you can come by and see what Ted's got.
I've been playing with that back at the office, but the one thing I haven't tried is, does the COGO fields work with a shape file or only in a geodatabase?
Shape files are good for what they are, but they're fairly limited. Well, the entire panel, not just me. Take over real job.
Yeah. Has anybody tried to manage their mapping in GIS form? Do all their drawing and updating in the GIS format?
There's a few folks,
How does that work?
Very well.
Good. We have some. Good.
It's very faster. It's just one process.
Maybe next year, well, I will probably to Southern California, but yeah. One of these years, show us how you do it. Because that
is.
Yeah.
Nice to see a real example.
Yeah.
Not the vendor guy saying, yeah, we can do this. Next year.
Yeah. Thank you.
They kind of alluded to something that I saw from your GIS project when you came up and showed that one slide where it was the data. I had some questions on that. As far as you have your data in the GIS, right, the data, and then you take pieces of that and update boxes, things like that, and have multiple revisions, and then you run a routine that calculates the changes that have been made, and you decide how to post it. Is that how that works?
It's more or less, yeah. There's more to it, but you know, it's a good question. Okay, so next one is Julie Lopez at the Rato. You had a lot of questions, so come on.
I had a lot of questions, and basically it comes down to, I was attempting to use feature link annotation. I was wondering if anyone else had success with that. Specifically, I was trying to update my legal descriptions with feature link annotation, and I was wondering if you had any advice.
You all know what feature link annotation is?
First of all, has anyone else had success with that?
I can tell you from the example that we had from MoDoc County, where we have feature linked annotation to generate the map of pages, we did put that in a personal geodatabase. Now, without knowing the specific size and scope of the size of the data set you're dealing with, it could be a data format issue, or it could be that you're dealing with a personal geodatabase and there are size limitations on that. I mean, access has a limitation. So if you do hit up against that, without looking at, you know, the actual data sets and how the annotation is being created, you know, depending on how many parsers, you may run up against the size limitation with it. But we have done it successfully, so it would be interesting to take a look at the data, maybe compare and come over and look at the data that I have that we've done it on and see how that works. You know, just to make sure that kind of the, it depends on how much stuff you put in there. Because you can put a lot of information in a lot of fields that you may not need. So, I will say at 9.2, which I guess I'm not supposed to talk that much about, because they're moving away from that access format for the personal geodatabase, that shouldn't be a problem at all. And at current coming version, you should be able to create whatever feature link annotation you need to without having any size limitations, without having to purchase, you know, the full SD, which I won't mention anymore about.
Let's get the definition.
Yeah, I was getting to the feature linked annotation. For those of you who don't know, in AutoCAD, you put text in a place. With the GIS stuff, you can do the same thing, but the annotation can be linked to a feature, so when that feature changes, your annotation can change as well. Very powerful tool, you know, especially if you're looking at things on a county or citywide basis. And you're doing a lot of different edits, and you don't want to go in and edit every single piece of text on your maps on a regular basis, that feature linked annotation is a very powerful tool. So your annotation is stored as an attribute, just like we talked about with the COGO stuff, and how you store the COGO information as an attribute of that line. You also store the annotation as an almost being linked to that line, so that when you create your map books, your annotation is updated as well. So no typing, which is very nice.
If you delete the feature, the annotation goes away because it's linked to it. You don't have to remember to go back and clean it up. Those types of things.
So that, it's kind of a non-answer because it's about looking at it and you know, why you would be hitting that restriction because we haven't run up against that yet. So we have successfully done it, but you know, I'm more than happy to look at the field structure we have and the field structure we're doing and just see, you know, why that's happening.
Just to mention, according to the slide that was shown earlier, I mean, you guys keep saying that the the size limitation is going to go away when access goes away, but really on a couple of those formats I saw that it only doubled. It didn't make it.
That's the personal and the work group SDE. Do you have a size limitation of 4 gigabytes? And that's a Microsoft imposed size limitation. Where the size difference really limitation really goes away is with that file based geo database. That can be any size, terabytes of data.
But then the file based geo database is not like an SDE database in that you can't, can you or can't you do multi-user editing?
Except multi-user editing and replication in history. You can't do that.
So you're going to be shackled with either one limitation or another.
You have to decide what your needs are, and that will help you decide.
You can't do that in a personal geo database anyway. So comparisons are in a file and personal, you have a. Everything pretty much sucks in personal GPU. Task 500 megabytes. You say it goes to 2 gigabytes, but really, performance wise, it really doesn't. From all the files you're in the database, you can have 70 gigs. Now, you're taking personal GPU database and creating personal SD, you're comparing apples to oranges. Because of the whole idea of where you have multiple editors and you can access it, where you can archive your database, where you can replicate with other databases. You can theoretically set up a personal SDE that replicates with an enterprise SDE. Complications on your part, but I think what you're almost, it sounds like there's differences.
No, I'm just saying they're talking as though in the new world order there's going to be no more limitations, but there are.
In the file geodatabase, there's no limitations except for the.
There is. You can only have one user at a time.
Well, yeah, but you can only have one user in the personal geodatabase. That's what the whole issue is.
That wasn't my point.
Your business needs, your business case, and decide which of those formats best suits that. Yeah, each one has trade-offs and goods and badges. So you have to pick the one that fits.
Can you explain real quick what comes in the box?
What comes in the box? $10. We're talking about the data format specifically, or just in general?
The data format, yeah, those. You have the four options below SDE.
So
info, ArcGIS.
File-based geodatabase. There's three levels of ArcGIS desktop: ArcView, ArcEditor, and ArcInfo. One costs a little bit more, and you get more functionality as you go up the chain. The file-based geodatabase, like a shapefile, it's just there. Anyone can use it. Any of the products. The personal SDE. Comes in a box with ArcEditor and ArcInfo, and it's an optional installation of the SQL Server Express, and then that is the tool behind building that. And the workgroup SDE comes with ArcGIS Server Workgroup, and then you can use ArcEditor or ArcInfo to edit that data. Some of you are probably going, what is he talking about? You can go to that more if you'd like. Talk to me later.
Covered by
good. Okay, good.
Tell me the state of.
If I exercise one way or another, it's
okay. Steve can figure out questions.
Well, I think my questions were more directed to you, Kula. And I think after we talked, I think you probably answered most of them.
Do you think other people might benefit from?
Well, maybe one of the questions I had was how your GIS system interfaces with your existing property data system.
Here in Santa Cruz,
can everybody hear the question?
No.
They can't hear the question.
How does our GIS system interface with the property database? It was in our case, it's the mainframe database.
Right.
And it doesn't. We have to download the mainframe files and link them to the GIS files. So it doesn't really interface. It just you kind of take a snapshot and link it.
Do you have any plans to maybe correlate the two?
There are some plans. No one talks to the drafters about them, though. So I guess when they're inactive, you know about it.
Okay.
Suri, Sacra from Sacramento. You sent the question?
I got a question answered by Tim. But it's we do some of on our sheets are on AutoCAD and some are manual drawn. So we update manually and AutoCAD both. So it goes to GIS unit and they update the GIS. So our question was we're thinking they're trying to give us that parcel layer for us to update, but if not, then we were thinking of converting all our manual pages to AutoCAD. We wanted to know what is the easiest way to do it. And the second question was the seamless layer we have probably with a PDS system, PLTS system, we can create separate pages. That's what we were wondering. Actually, my assessor wondered that, right? So those are the questions.
Thank you. I can answer to the, the conversion side of things.
Yeah, so an AutoCAD question, that's cool. So with the conversion side of things, there's a lot of things that you guys are doing with, you know, bringing older maps into digital and, you know, paper maps, scanning them in. Most of you guys have TIFFs. So what we do is in Raster Design, which is a tool we use to bring in a TIFF, and then basically it's kind of like a digitizer board. We're able to click from point A to point B and create actual vector line work. The question came up, can we just, you know, wipe the whole map and create vector out of the whole thing? That'd be great. There are tools out there, you know, $10,000, $15,000 tools that'll do batch processing like that. But the work you end up doing in the long run with going back and trying to clean that up and matching it to the original data is more horrific than it is to do it point by point in Raster Design. And so kind of how it works is you have your TIFF image overlaid and automatically you're just snapping to pixels. And you get options as it comes to a break. So if it doesn't recognize a piece of text, if it doesn't recognize a break, or you have dashed lines, things like that. So you have a lot of control as you're going through that. So you get the 100% quality out of the conversion process. So that's one way of we're doing it. A lot of folks are right now kind of doing hybrids as well. They're bringing in what they need. They're converting, you know, they're just having a TIFF over there and they're just doing the lot splits as they need to do them. Some are, if they've got a change on the booking for that page, they do the whole page. So there's a lot of different mentalities and thoughts out there as far as how to do it. Of course, there's also an option where we can go in and do that for you, just kind of do all the conversion. We've done that for the county and several other customers. So there's a lot of different options. It's really what fits the budget, what fits the process, what kind of staffing you have to accommodate, and what kind of schedule you can put to get that accommodated.
The other one, with the PLTS system, we have seamless layout, base layers, and we can convert to separate pages. I think we can do that already.
Yeah.
So that one has been explained. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I say something? Of course you can.
Please go up in the front so everybody can hear.
For all the users who are still using ArcGIS, though, you can use ArcScan. Do the raster to vector conversion as well. So you can do the vector tracing and the point to point, like what you can do from the CAD system. You can also do select connected cells. Where you actually have your image is actually on a series of little squares, right, little pixels. So you can actually go in and select all the connected cells greater than a certain number, and then delete them. And then you have a little raster painting toolbar that you can go in and clean up any areas where the actual rasters are actually connected to maybe your line work. Then get rid of that, and then you can do based on your vectorization settings, you can go then through and get your line work done, or you can do the vector tracing from point to point.
No, Ted does not work for ESRI.
Really like her goal.
The more features are not connected anymore, depending on your license level.
Right. Yeah.
I'd like to like to add that I'm from the county of Marin, and we have a program called Spotlight, and it's a raster imaging. And so we use that in lieu of what has been presented today for editing, and it really helps a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of tools out there that are really good. I mean, we've tried Hitachi, we've seen with really whatever and saw with Red Hat. And like, we're the main, if it works for you, great, use it. I mean, it's a great tool. So they had bought it already. There's no reason to switch something that works. So I mean, they have a great tool there.
Does anyone have questions?
Yeah.
Please come forward.
I'd like to know what you advise, being from a poorer county, where we do have a hybrid animal we're working with. We have some scanned images, we have some that are totally vector, but stepping into the GIS world is kind of like putting on a blindfold, stepping off the cliff. Any advice on how to not make large mistakes getting into it with an animal? You're limited in funding, you're limited in people, bodies to move it, to work it. What's the best way to ease into that environment?
I'll just say one thing real quick. One way is to do just that, ease into it, not do the entire county at once. Just as you have updates on pages, move those pages over and update those. Don't do it all at once.
One of the things that we found is, a lot of folks want to do is you do something, you take pride in what you do, and you want to do it right. You know, you want to have everything accurate. And one of the biggest killers of GIS in the beginning was everybody had to have perfect data. Well, guess what? You're never going to have perfect data because you're always updating. You're always changing it. So take advantage and leverage what you have. Let that work for you. Let that produce benefit for you. And once you start seeing the benefits of that, you're going to start seeing other resources and other interests and value coming to this table for GIS. So I agree with that.
One more thing I want to add, because I live in Butte County. I actually know these GIS people there very well. We've been working very closely with them. And Jim Aaron, you're in, who's your GIS thing, has got a pretty good team going on. And I think it's coming, of age.
Right, but so we're trying to get things coming from the assessor's office to Jim in a better condition and making sure that all the information sinks.
There's a lot of things to consider there with conversion. I mean, you use a map so you can geo-machine files. You have all the, as far as just converting a map, you have it within just a geo-machine file. Are they wanting you to actually create a base map, or are they going to take those ones?
Right now, we're going to use
a base map. Okay. Well, you can export it to shape. That's an option to make it legible for them. They should be able to, you guys can bring in PWG. So there should be no communication issue. There's other things that can enhance that. I was talking a little bit about that FMI tool. Really great CAT GIS middleware that'll allow, actually taking layers of information and attributes from database, you're not doing the database side, but attributes from the map and pointing them to other named layers. So there's a lot of good stuff out there for that kind of stuff. So.
Lastly, you've heard a couple of different times where people have said, well, I've gone to this county and seen how they've done it. And that's great. I mean, your day, the time, driving your car, but that's free. Most people are, I haven't been to a county yet. We're like, we're not going to tell you what we do and how we do it, because they've all been down that road. And I think that is probably going to be the most valuable tool because, there's not a lot of assessor's offices sitting around buckets of cash to just dump into if we want to go into GIS. Everyone has started somewhere. Some of them have had assessors that are more open to the idea we want to move into GIS. And the other thing is you probably have people within the county somewhere who are using GIS enough to help you get started as well. So instead of having to put a huge training investment or, hey, we're starting from scratch, we don't know anything about GIS and happy to go that route, there's probably people within the county because they want your data
and they know you're going to take care of it better than anybody else is going to, that they'll probably be able to help you along that path as well. You know? And so the more you talk to people, the more you'll find out. I mean, that's why most of the people were here, and most of the questions we heard are about, you know, what's everybody else doing? How did everybody else go down this road? More questions?
Well, actually, I was going to add to your answer to her. You might look out in your county for people to go into partnership with, like she said, who want your data. Our county has just had a little bump in GIS funding because our Homeland Security Committee recognized the value of GIS for emergency services. They paid for part of our upgrade to the 9 series. They have paid for training that has included county offices that quite frankly don't have GIS that they would need, but to get the people they need trained. In fact, for the assessor's office, our machines were getting out of date. You know, they were ancient, like 4 years old, which in computer years is bad, and really would not run the new program. And we went to them with a request. They bought our new workstations for the three of us, Madera County, and they've told us already, come back. They couldn't do it in the budget they had. We're talking to them about a large printer, because really for the assessor's office, we don't need that big printer. It's for other people that we work with. So that's one thing to look at. Who else maybe has some bucks available that can help you? Because it really has helped us. In fact, the workstations, we said, no, we have good screens. You don't have to buy us screens. The workstations have gotten cheap enough in the meantime. Their IT said, we can get you flat screens. So we got you screens, even. They're beautiful. But that really has been a biggie for us. And I know Homeland Security funding is changing, and I don't know how it'll affect that. But when you hear some of the goofball things that Homeland Security funds have been spent on, I'm very proud of our county that a lot of what we have done is toward GIS. Because, I mean, anybody here, if you haven't already thought of it, knows that the data you're working on is invaluable in an emergency.
And I will say that Madera County is a good example of doing a lot with very little as well. I mean, you know, work with your environmental health department, and the attitude with which they've gone into things is that we have no resources. How are we going to make this work? So I think they've done a really good job over the years of kind of dealing with that in a way that's been very constructive and getting people to work together, as difficult as that can be. I think there was another question in the back.
Yeah, this is a CAD question. We just I'd love to talk to Sacramento because we're in a similar transition right now. We just went into hybrid map, into the Raptor design. And my question is regarding distortion. What we've ended up having happen is when we. What we're doing now, because of the distortion in terms of scale compared to the Mylar and compared to the printed out TIFF image of our scanned image, it's coming out distorted, and we can determine that it's not from the scanning process. It's not caused from that.
So your TIFF is distorted?
It's coming out after we manipulate it with the raster design program.
So when you bring it in, raster design, you're showing a distorted image?
When we print it out, we see the distortion because we do an overlay with our Mylar to check to see that the scale is coming out the way that it should, or we just scale it.
Okay.
And it's distorting. And then we end up, what seems to resolve the problem is we reinsert the TIFF image, but not from the link that you have to create, not from the other drive that you're creating the link with. You have to go back to the original TIFF image and insert the original whole TIFF without any.
Are you working on 2007? What version?
2006,
okay. I can't pinpoint why that would be happening that way. I do recall in 06 some tech issues coming in to somewhat of that regard. In 2007, they've separated the raster design team. MAP was doing the raster design, now they kind of separated as their own entity to kind of focus on that. So I'd be interested to see if we tried that. You're on maintenance, I assume. Mm-hmm. If we try that in 07, and see if we're still having that same issue.
Okay. And it's not a consistent problem. It's a random.
This might help. I don't know what kind of standard you're using. We had the same problem until we bought the 815 scanner. It's made by Hewlett Packard, and you can actually scan as a PAL's raster image.
Problem, but we've determined that it's not with the scanned image because we print one copy of the TIFF image and it's distorted. We reinsert it, print it, and it's fine.
Yeah, I'd like to try that. Maybe you can send me a TIFF and we can print that out for you. Let's do that.
So we have distortion happen all the time caused by the plotters that we're plotting on and the media that we're plotting on. So I don't know if it would have anything to do with that.
You
can get up to like 2 inches of stretch on a 36 inch plot. So, no? Okay.
No. Thanks.
Are there any more questions for the technical team?
I'll just show you what.
Okay, I did. Okay, well, in that case, there are other issues that face us, not necessarily technical issues. And when I sent out the solicitation for questions, I pretty much immediately got this desperate plea from Doug Vieira. What counties are running out of assessors' three-digit book numbers, and how are you resolving this problem? So, Doug, do you want to come and talk about this?
Three-digit book numbers. Oh,
that's
awesome. Yeah, 41 counties.
What's your first name? Give me a phone number.
Hi, I'm Doug Vieira with Riverside County. And we are running into that situation where we're running out of three-digit book numbers. We're, as you know, Riverside County is growing very fast. This year, or last year, we did 32,000 new subdivision lots. So we are growing leaps and bounds. So we are running into a situation I projected about 5 years, we're going to run out of three-digit book numbers. So we've been, you know, thinking about what we could do to resolve this issue. One of my technicians came to my office one day and threw this idea down, and I just couldn't believe something so simple. What about what we end up doing is moving the assessor block number over one bit into the assessor's parcel number, which would allow us 999 pages. Talking with Jim from Kern County, his suggestion was forget the block, make the page 99 and make the parcels 999. Or pages 999 and the parcels 999. I like his idea better because the conversion would be a lot easier not to have to deal with the blocks. And talking with Ralph, he was very nice and he understands what we're running up against. He says, you know, the fact that we're doing GIS now, we're not trying to keep the assessor's book small anymore for the appraiser to take them out in their car. They pretty much print the map area that they're interested in and take that out with them. So what I'm here today to kind of put out there for you guys to think about as you grow into this, and the reason why I wanted to stay with the nine-digit assessor's parcel number, as you know, a lot of other departments depend on our number. And if we change that digit to 4 digits for 1,000 book, that means everybody's got to gear up their programs to meet up with that. And we're talking about big money for a lot of other departments. And private sectors, I don't know about Grant back there, if he deals with that or not, with his program, with CD data. But we, you know, my thought was, let's keep it simple, let's keep it to the 9-digit and see what we can do about it. So I just want to throw that thought out there and see, you know, what the other counties are thinking about. I don't know if you guys have reached that situation, but I know LA is already 1,000 books, aren't you, your 4 digits? So we're not going to help you guys out at all with this idea, but I know as you start growing, this is going to be a problem. The situation I have right now, I'm splitting this year six books, and that's additional work that we have to do above the 24,000 parcels we have to do this year. And so it's very, it's additional work that we really don't want to do. So, yeah, I wanted to put that idea out there and open that up for discussion and see maybe we could talk with Ralph and say this is what we want to do is that, you know, go with 999 pages, 999 parcels, and quit splitting these books. So, you stretching?
No, I question about anyway. You're up to time. I'm just going to say we started doing that in 1995. So, using that numbering system, we just took, when we had to split a book, we took an even number. Our county was odd number books. We started using even numbered books and using that numbering system on our even numbered books.
Oh, you are? So, using 999 pages now?
Yep.
Oh, that's great. How come you didn't share that with us? I could have used that about 5 years ago.
We're there.
10 years ago. And Ralph, you don't have a, I don't want to put you on the spot, but we talked about it last night. I had a couple drinks, so I wanted to make sure I was right. Hoping we're a couple. I hang around with a dangerous crowd out there, so. What's your feelings? I know we talked about that last night, maybe you want to do a little song and dance up here?
Sure. What do I think about it?
Not much. I really don't have a problem with it. You have to go back and look at what that numbering system does. When it was put into place, back minimum years ago, there was an inconsistent property identification system. There were 58 counties and the property was being identified 59 different ways. That's when the, I believe it was in the early 40s, Board of Equalization came in and said, all right, all of you guys have to use the same system, all 58 counties, and this is how you're going to do it. So the system was developed that way.
That was back when people used to listen to the state board.
I know. Do you have any idea how depressing it is? I talk to you guys on the phone, and all of a sudden I go, did you read what I sent you last week? And the answer is no. It's depressing. But the system made sense in the early 1940s. Because nobody imagined that there would be 13 million parcels in the state of California. Coming out of that with the numbering system was the AH215, which also set mapping standards for you guys that you are supposed to be following.
What have we done?
It was set up based on the technology and the logic at the time. The reason it's 11 by 17 was to have the appraiser be able to have the appraisers go out in the field to just take a map, it fit under their arm, sits on the seat of the car. Nowadays, that's not an issue anymore. How many of the appraisers going out of your office are actually taking map pages? I mean, some of them maybe, but they can download this stuff onto their laptop or to their Palm Pilot or to their tablet computer. The numbering system and all of those mapping standards based on technology and a need of 40, 60 years ago. As those needs change, those standards need to change with them, and they need to change with reality. Now, the reality is in the numbering system, using a 9-digit APN number, that I have a feeling will remain constant, the 9 digits. How the digits are broken up, probably is not as critical. because you would not, you would be absolutely amazed, even though you work with it day in and day out, where that APN appears and how it is used. Not only in your office, public works, in transportation, in real estate, you start getting out into the private sector. All of the, Mr. Lighten was talking about the title companies, you know, how deeply involved they are using that APN number. So as long as it will fit the nine-digit field, probably it will make, you know, very little difference. If you go to 10, every one of those computer systems, programs, are going to have to be rewritten. Lots and lots of money. Give you a real quick short story. We were running out of secondary numbers. This was in 1996. In Lancaster, the city of Lancaster. We had reached 995. And Lancaster is still growing. What are we going to do? Called LA and said, we got to do something about it. They said, no, you guys stop it because you're poor. We flew down, met with Emilio and Richard and the people in the auditor's office and said, this is a major issue because we're going to run out in Lancaster right behind the city of Palmdale in Santa Clarita. They said, well, that's really not our problem. And I said, okay, it's not your problem, then I will solve it. The secondary will go to four digits. The fear in the room was unbelievable. Because LA had just finished spending $5 million rewriting their property tax system for a six-digit number. And I was now saying, okay, you're going to do it again for a seven-digit number. Thank you for cooperating, Emilio. I appreciate that. But that's going to be the reaction if you look at changing the number of characters in that field. But how that is broken up is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty much going to be kind of a local issue. And it makes absolute sense to go to 999 books and 999 pages. The numbering system will never change because it's so deeply embedded in the life of the universe. It's, you know, it's one of those things that you just have to deal with. You know, it's the APN numbers, the Holy Trinity, transubstantiation. You know, you don't know what it is, but it's there, and you just have to accept it. That's my feeling.
I kind of agree with what Ralph had to say, and that's what he echoed last night. I'm curious how many people would be interested in going that route. How many counties would like to, you know, use the 999 pages and the 999 parcels? Would they take advantage of that? No?
Maybe when they decide to make a new system.
Yeah, I know. We're looking at a new program right now, which we'd have to develop that type of situation.
One thing I left out, which is something I said earlier and related to a different issue, is that the thing to keep in mind is that the reason this whole thing came about, this type of numbering system, as I said earlier, is because there was a different system in each county. So that if it goes to, if the overriding reason to go to 999 books, 999 pages, that decision is going to have to, it cannot deviate, it will have to apply to all counties. So whatever the decision is, and where that decision is made, is kind of up there, you know, in the atmosphere above us, but that decision of 999 books
for Riverside and LA also has to apply to Alpine. Who has what, two books?
Are you 9 digits still, and you got?
We jumped to 10 digits in around 1950 something, shortly after the state.
I see how much we're listening to.
So would you have exception to the rule with LA then?
Well, LA is an exception.
We knew we were going to grow, so we didn't want to wait until this time. So.
Yeah. No, we also have physical books. Do you have the physical map book?
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do have the physical map book.
Now, what would happen if that map book has 999 pages?
I think you would have book 1, 2, and 3 that you would be able to
with. Still, it's a monster.
It still is a monster, but yet those books would probably only end up in our counter books for our customers to use, and it wouldn't be our appraisers just taking them out to the field with them. I know my appraisers just print out the maps. We have our maps digital for them, so they can just print out that map very quickly instead of going and pulling the book out and Xeroxing it. So they're able to get that and take that map out to fill with them. We are definitely trying to push the technical. So I think, like you were saying, we're going to have laptops with our appraisers or handheld palms to go out there and do their work that way. So we're really going digital a lot with our GIS.
My question for that issue is, I've been involved in this since 1991, and I've never worked in the county, so I, you know, really don't know what it is that you need or what you're doing. My question is, why do we need printed maps at this stage of the game? If your county is heavily into the digital world, why would you need to have an 11 by 17 printed map? Because I say you have to in the AH215. Well, the AH215, in my feeling, needs to be looked at that if the only reason you're doing it is because the book says you have to, re-examine that and come up with a different requirement. Because the only thing it has to do is you have to ensure the integrity of the information, and it has to be easily accessible to the appraisers and the general public. If the appraisers can download onto their laptop, if the general public can access either through the website or come to the counter and use the public workstation there to do the exact same thing, let's re-examine the necessity of maintaining these books on the shelves that are just collecting dust, and the only time you open it is to insert a new page in. So, you know, honestly, let's talk about it and see about getting some things changed. Now I will really stop talking.
Yeah, I know we're close enough. So what I would suggest at this point, go back to your assessor, explain what we talked about, and let's use our website as a feedback. Maybe you guys get back and post your assessor's opinion on this. If we have to wait a year to talk about it, I'd hate to do that, but I would be nice to hear what everybody wants to do, and from that point we could go ahead and maybe we could have a letter sent out from our president to the Assessors Association stating what we found out today, and represent us that way. I think that might be a better way, and then have them feed down to you what they thought about it. So I don't know, what do you think,
President?
I'm happy to write a letter to the association, but I think, like Doug said, we'd probably move this around in the forum a little bit, and you know, people give feedback on it, and then I will write my letter and send it out to the forum, and then we can send it to the association.
One last observation. I work with the property tax managers in the auditor controller side. because I'm the information management, I probably deal with them more than I do this group here. One of the things that that group does, that does very well, very effectively, is they have a group email broadcast, and they use it all the time. I'm on that broadcast list, so I probably get 40 or 50 emails a day, because someone will ask a question, how do you deal with this scenario in your group? And invariably, 20 or 30 counties will respond, which will trigger another question. You've got the calmapping.org. Make use of it. Set up some sort of system so that someone can ask the question and broadcast to everyone so that everyone can respond.
That's a great idea. We'll do it.
It needs to go.
Talk to Jim.
Talk to Jim.
Talk to Jim.
Also, you can start a lot of other groups within
that. Oh, add drop to a mailing list.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. There was three additional questions. Yes?
I have a very quick question for Ramon. We're using RMF3D 2006 and Raster Design 2006. They gave us training in April. That was great and wonderful. And just when I thought that we were getting settled, comes another box. It says release 2007. Is it beneficial for us to take every upgrade, or what do you suggest we do?
Yeah, it's a common, definitely good question. You know, as a representative of a few manufacturers, we, as a reseller, give our honest opinion. So that's what I'm going to give you, is our professional opinion. Not necessarily every release is pertinent to what you do. And what we like to do is, whatever new release comes out with our customers, especially when there's a lot involved in implementation and workflow and things like that, and it's going to alter or change things, is first of all, we have these seminars to make folks aware of the new functionality, to catch interest, to make aware, you know, is this functionality going to be pertinent to what I'm doing? And cases we're going to find, absolutely. I speak on behalf of Map3D. There's more GIS capabilities in Map3D than there really are cadastral mapping features. So I can't really make a strong recommendation that it's going to really impact you or benefit you in any way to upgrade to 2007 at this point. You've already put, you know, money in training. You've already got a workflow going. I say ride with that. That's a good solution. It's working for you. There's no need to change it just for the sake of changing it. On behalf of the maintenance, though, it's cost-effective, budgetarily wise, to maintain that. That doesn't, that for the money standpoint, it's more cost-effective to keep that going versus waiting several releases behind. And that's kind of our take on it. You know, we look at every release individually. 2007 is a good tool. It's used for, you know, we got the FTO and some great GIS capability in there. If you're pushing GIS and you're working on it, they encourage the 2007. But for cadastral mapping, I can't really give you any really high benefits. 2006, absolutely.
Kind of the tack we've taken in the past is we look at, we'll install the new one on like one test machine and run through it. And first off, we ask, does the new release fix any bugs that were really affecting us in the old release? Second, does it offer any new features or functions that are or can be pertinent to what we're doing that can speed up our job?
And we highly recommend any of you that are using the AutoCAD products, call. Let's talk about it. You know, before you get ready to do an installation, that's what we're here for. We want to be there for you to answer those questions.
It's 1 minute past five, but I really wanted to address these questions that Mary Jo, Nancy Jo had. And she asked, how are the assessor offices that are running the GIS complying with Attorney General's opinion release of property information? And I guess that was thrown about on the forum a little bit. I can tell you in Santa Cruz, we put it free for download on our website, all of it. So it's free for downloading in Santa Cruz. But let's talk about that on the forum as well. And I will post your other questions on the forum since it is now past 5 o'clock and I really wanted to stop at 5. bearing in mind...
Quick show of hands, how many actually own the parcel layer? I would think that there are very few.
Own that parcel layer?
Own the parcel layer. So I have to worry about that. You? Okay.
Small parcel.
Yeah.
At 5:30, we have a reception here in the Wellgreens room next door. So it's going to be a buffet of hors d'oeuvres from 5:30 to 7:30. There will be a bar there. You each have one ticket for one free drink at the bar. It's in your name, but so hope to see you there. Anything to attract you guys to come. So see you at 5:30 and then in the morning at 8:00.